Welcome to Sense, Sensibility, and Chaos, where we will bewitch you, body and soul, while talking about the pop culture favorite, Pride and Prejudice.
I'm Busy, the one most likely to show Mrs. Bennet some compassion for her poor nerves.
I'm Well Read, the one least likely to let Caroline Bingley get away with her nonsense.
And I'm Tall Girl, the one who absolutely encourages Lydia to run off with Wickham if it means Darcy and Lizzie could finally get together.
Today's episode is a celebration of the 2005 film adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
Whether you loved it, hated it, or still aren't sure about that hand flex.
Let's talk it through.
Hi,
ladies.
Oh, we're so... Hello, hello.
How's everybody doing?
Well, you know, I'm doing pretty okay.
I just want people to recognize that we weren't alive in 2005 when this movie came out.
Not at all.
So this is just really us speaking from like a historian's perspective.
Yes, that is true. No, I think this is a good topic. I mean, obviously our podcast is a nod to Jane's novel Sense and Sensibility. So with Focus Features re-releasing the film for the 20th anniversary, you know, I think people have asked us to talk about some of the books and, you know, other dramas. So I think this is a good one to start into.
I can't
Absolutely.
Believe it's been 20 years.
I
just like, okay, that makes sense, but also like that can't possibly be.
No, they're not.
So many things were 20 years ago that I am beginning to doubt that I was ever young.
You mean, you know, they just...
Well, I mean, come on. I've been in my grandma era since birth, so.
That is fair. I think with this one, you know, it was a bit unexpected with some of the cast members.
Well, yeah, it's also rather controversial, not just for the cast members, but for a lot of the way that it was filmed and stuff like that, too.
I will say, I didn't watch it when it came out. I saw it later, and I had seen Matthew McFadden in Spooks, where he plays a spy, which is, like, the antithesis of Mr. Darcy. So, like, my frame of reference going in was, like, that guy? That guy's going to be Mr. Darcy? So, like, I didn't watch it originally for that. I was like, Donald Sutherland, yes. Judi Dench, always. I didn't watch it when it came out because I was like, I'm going to hate this.
I wasn't familiar with him prior. And I think that if people are familiar, obviously there's so many versions. There's adaptations. There's like the faithful ones or try to be faithful to the book. They're the, you know, the play on the movies and converted to modern times and all that. And
Bride and Prejudice, anyone?
What was that?
Bride and Prejudice.
I was just thinking
Lost
that,
in Austin. Oh. Austin Land.
Austin Land. And I mean. It's just obviously adaptations for many of her novels. But Keira Knightley, I wasn't sure. I've come to appreciate her more, I think, now in the role. I think we'll get into this. It was just such a different approach than earlier versions.
Oh. So I'd only seen her in Pirates of the Caribbean, so I was like, oh, here's an actress who is forever going to be put into hoop skirts. Like, she will never act in any...
Well,
she
she's
was
also
like,
got
you know...
a classically beautiful face. Like, she's got one of those... It's not one of those ultra-sculpted Hollywood faces that you see today. Mm-hmm. It's much more soft around the edges and nice proportions and things like that. So it's... She's got period piece written all over her.
Years later, I found out that Rosamund Pike, who plays Jane, was supposed to be Lizzie, and I was like, I'm actually glad they didn't do that, but it makes sense in casting that was their first kind of like, although dyeing her hair brown wouldn't really have done her any favors.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah. I'd also seen, besides the whole Pirates of the Caribbean, Keira had also been in, like, Bend It Like Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, that's a good one. And so I was like, all right, where, like, yes, there's a drama piece, you know, mentality to it, but also I'm like, all right, where are we gonna go? So
fun fact, she was also in the Star Wars first three films as Natalie Portman's body double for
That's right.
Queen Amidala.
Correct. They're like the
So,
same
yeah,
size.
they are the same size, they are the
God.
same height, they look remarkably alike, in especially in the makeup that Amidala wears during certain portions of the films. So you actually there are moments where you cannot tell who is sitting on the throne unless you look really close
With all that makeup.
with all that makeup on. Yeah. So there are some jokes that with things like Ahsoka and whatever coming out that Keira Knightley might show up if Natalie Portman doesn't come back.
That would be interesting.
It'd be very interesting.
So why do we think, I think in the past, I don't know, 8, 9 years, I think it always did well and had a following, but I feel like there's this a very,
A resurgence.
yes, and there's like this deep, like this version has a chokehold on people.
Yeah, I
And
think it
so
was the first like modern. It was the first one intended for a postmodern audience. Like, there's a lot of moody sort of brooding moments in it for all of the characters. It's much more realistically shot in terms of the costuming. So you have a mix of the different periods that would have led up to the Regency era, for a slightly upper class family, there would have been a lot of mixing of 18th century and early 19th century garb. So you see that in, you know, Mr. Bennet's breeches and Mrs. Bennet's placard front dresses and hannier widened skirts. So I think it's the first interpretation where a modern audience can look at it and go, oh, okay, I recognize a bunch of different influences, as opposed to it being a strictly Regency, upper echelon kind of straight interpretation of the story.
And
I
I
will
think,
say,
oh, hold on.
I like the 1950s version, but
With
it's
the
like,
skirts?
I mean, but it's like, it's so
Laurence
ridiculous, but it's
Olivier?
like, it's so somehow perfect. The 1970s version, 60s version, it's just, you just think to yourself, like, what a great deal of starch. Like, nobody looks, that hair
No.
is just epoxied into
Hold that thought.
place. And people are going to kill me, but the Colin Firth version, the fact that they have like inner dialogue, I'm like, stop talking to me. Like, I don't want to hear your inner thoughts. Get, move on. It bothers me so much. Everybody's like, oh my God, when he comes out of the lake. And I'm like, and he has inner monologue. I don't want it. Just.
Hey, at the lake, when does he have
He
enough?
doesn't have inner monologue at the lake. No, but when he's brooding about writing the letter
Just, it breaks
to
it for me. I was
Lizzie,
like, okay,
it
okay.
breaks
Like,
that fourth wall for you.
no. And yet everybody loves it. They're like him in clingy pants. Like, there's even a reference in Bridget Jones to it. And I'm just like,
Oh, there's a couple of movies that refer to the whole, white
can't.
shirt drenched.
That,
Yeah.
I know. Like, people will sit around. They're like, oh my God, it's the greatest film ever. I'm like, I loathe it. I loathe it. It's on my list of things that you would make me watch
Wait,
if you
Ed,
want to
no.
torture me.
I don't think it was the greatest film ever. I do think it was probably the most faithful adaptation to the original work, the 1995 version.
I would like 2005 to be as long as the
Yes.
1990s version. Like, that
Yeah.
is the thing I think I would like most about 2005. I wish it was two parts.
I think, and as we're going into this and what makes it so loved, I think why I think this is one of the, it's such a chokehold on people is because in a modern way, it gives you that quick fix of Jane Austen, in a condensed, obviously, they're usually either two
In 90
parts,
minutes.
a mini series. So this is, and I don't know the runtime off the top of my head, but this is a good throw the book at you and the plot. And if you don't have a whole night to, if you have like an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, you could just watch it.
It's also easier to digest in a lot of ways. Like, they soften Mr. Bennet, they soften Mrs. Bennet. the characters of them. They're not as difficult to deal with. Darcy looks rather than proud and imposing. Darcy is kind of rom-commed a little bit. So he's just an introvert who doesn't know how to people, rather than somebody who doesn't want a person because he believes that people are a certain kind of way. So it really is broken down for modern sensibilities rather than being more faithful to the original material. But I do enjoy like the sweeping landscapes of things, and it sets a tone. The film sets a tone that you don't really get to until the middle of the 1995 version, where you start to see the countryside of England and stuff like that. So,
No, no one wants to stand on a cliff for like the Jane Austen version of the Titanic bow of the ship moment. Like, I'm sure wherever that cliff is in England, it now has a fence.
Yeah, I think though you speak to like cinematically, I think this also goes to the how it feels modern is the color palette.
Oh, the drenched color palette and the sort of sweeping,
I have this meme, and I actually it's not even a meme, it's just like it was I saw it as a meme where it said like what is your color palette? And it's the scene of Darcy walking at sunrise over the field, and you see that scene, and then below it, it does this actually quite beautiful color palette of like deep turquoises, some peaches, and all this. I was like, actually, if I redo my room, I wouldn't hate this palette. This is a really nice, calming, and like a comforting palette there. So I think the colors, didn't feel some of the things I think in other versions. The dance scenes and the ball scenes were a bit bright with the lights, and it's like, but you didn't, it should not have been that bright when you think about it with all the candles. And so I think that was it, the way they, the camera work and the shooting itself. So like the angles, excuse me, I think were more of a modern approach as well. And they didn't allow for. And I think this goes, so I looked it up. It was like a 2 hour and like 7 minute runtime. So because you're trying to get so much in to such a short time frame, there isn't a lot of downtime and slow dialogue. There's
It
set.
is very well paced in that respect, aside from the cutaways to the scenery.
Like it's
That's
pretty.
where you get your breath to kind of take in everything that's happened thus far and move on to the next bit.
But it's quite like the speed in which some of their talking takes place, the dialogue, it does come across a little bit faster than you see in other versions.
Oh yeah, which is again that more modern aesthetic.
We have things.
Everybody's very quippy and
Correct.
yeah, and the director wasn't like, they're all usually come out like, oh, I've loved Austen forever. This director was like, yeah, I read it when I had to direct it. Like, he has no an emotional attachment of that, like, tween, like, I would be the Darcy. So, like, I think he chose what was necessary to get the story through instead of like, this is the scene everybody loves from the last version. We must. Donald Sutherland said the same thing. Like, he must have seen one version. He was like, he refused to look at past versions. He didn't want any undue influence on how he played the character. So, like, trying desperately to separate it from 1995 because that was like the iconic one that you didn't want to like end up being accused of duplicating.
So I think also that the way they present the characters, like the costumes obviously, but no one I felt was overly pretty or made up.
They gave Judi Dench wrinkles. Like, you get that close up of her when she's lecturing her. Like, they gave Judi Dench, like, every wrinkle, every, like, chin hair. That was, we were living in the Barbara Walters, like, ultra filtered, like, The View kind of camera angles at the time. To give Judi Dench a wrinkle was like, no,
To be
no.
honest about the age of the character.
Yes.
Oh.
And they didn't put on like a letter. And not that some of the other versions had like heavy makeup on them. Maybe the the what is the 30s is a bit,
Well, I
much.
think we're talking about the beginning of the digital age of film too, where you don't need all of that pancake makeup that had to be worn for film. So you can get away with, letting a character not wear makeup or not wear a lot of makeup and just show their natural skin texture and stuff. Again, that lack of sculpted sort of glass milk skin that is very in vogue today. You see the texture of the skin and you see the breathability of it or lack thereof, depending on the clothing that they're wearing in as well. Like if they're wearing a corset and you can tell it's difficult for them to breathe and stuff like that. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting point.
I also like that. I both like and sometimes get a little frustrated is that with Keira Knightley, she is not a very top-heavy actor, and they didn't try to make her have this like
Heaving bosom.
I mean, she was actually more of the ideal for that time period. So, like, I know they didn't choose her bosom, but like in Pirates of the Caribbean, where they basically gave her fake boobs in the posters. Like, I actually really appreciate that. That was like, no, they were willowy. They were wearing basically see-through cotton and freezing to death. Apparently, for the proposal scene, they filmed it in freezing cold rain. She was like the most miserable thing ever, but like it gave us the intensity to get the scene done because it's like 12 degrees out. That shivering nervousness was actually frostbite.
The goose pimples that we interpret as deep love and excitement that her beloved is proposing to her is actually she's freezing cold and using that to flesh out the scene, so to speak.
No, I mean, to work with it is like amazing. And for a younger actor at that time, I think she was only in her 20s at the time. She wasn't like
She
super
was in her
old.
young
So like
20s, too.
to work with, as opposed to like, we can't film today. It's not sunny. Like, no, this is good.
And that's true, too, that she was more the age of the actual character versus some of the other actresses who have played Lizzie, being, upwards of 20 or in their 30s.
Because there's a UK version of this film and there's the American version of this film.
Good point.
How do you feel about that last scene and the fact that half the world has no idea that that scene existed until somebody put it up on YouTube one day and like the UK lost their minds?
It's like, was it Iceland or Finland reading a different version of Dracula? But they were actually reading like a fan fiction version of the book rather than an actual translation of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I remember one of my friends, like from England, sent it to me, and she's like, "What the hell is this?" And I was like, "That's the way Pride and Prejudice ends." She's like, "That is not how Pride and Prejudice like." And it came out like 5 years after the film. Like, I don't know how, but suddenly, like, the rest of the world lost their minds. I remember that more than I remember the film. I was like, people were mad.
People were angry.
I think, well, I mean, listen, we get it. It is any of Jane Austen and certain writers, their works are so ingrained and loved worldwide that people have strong opinions, like deep, deep, deep opinions about this. Now, when I look at the ending, one, I'm going to be interested to see. I believe that I know the release is here in the States. I'm not sure if they're doing it worldwide. And I'm interested to see which version is going to be put out or if they're going to adjust it based on the country in which it's released. Like, will the UK people get the ending with Mr. Bennet in the library, or will they get the version we had? So I'm interested to see first what version will go out and where.
If they don't add it as bonus content, I don't think they'll sell a single DVD. That would be such a missed moment for like, I know they already had some promo event somewhere. I saw a TikToker like she should have been, well, she feels she should have been invited to it. like you don't know how much I love this, but it would be such a missed opportunity for them not to include that as a DVD bonus.
For the UK audiences. I think for me, I think part of why, excuse me, it kind of probably was necessary in some ways because I feel just ending in the library with Mr. Bennett saying, I'm quite put out or whatever the last words are. It doesn't, you don't get the wedding scene. You don't get like seeing them married. Like, I think that's the kind of like, let's wrap this up in a tight, nice bow moment. So like maybe you don't get the wedding, but you're getting after. And it's something that is not original, so
See, I would have been okay with them just touching foreheads in the field and skipping over the rest. I
yeah.
don't need the "you can only call me Mrs. Darcy" when you're completely, totally. And I'm like, of course, like he's a modern day billionaire, and she just became a one percenter. We know their lives are gonna go well. I don't need you to reassure me that every moment of your existence is going to be glorious. Although a couple years later, Masterpiece Theater carried it, but it came out and like the British Christmas thing was Death Comes to Pemberley, and
Yes.
people were super pissed
I was just thinking
because
about that one.
Jane and Mr. Darcy had like friction in their marriage. Like, great
Oh,
story,
Mr.
great everything, but it
Okay.
was like, how dare
Wait,
you
wait, wait.
imply that they had a moment that wasn't perfect?
Are you talking about Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy or Jane and
Oh,
Oh, Jane
sorry,
and Mr.
Elizabeth.
Bingley?
Okay. I loved Death Comes to Pemberley. That was
Yes, I loved it too.
so great, but like, no idea that that was coming. Like, how dare you? Like, people have such strong
When you
feelings.
think about it from a realistic standpoint, like of course those char all of those characters would have had messed up marriages at some point. Like it just kind of goes along with being human beings, but we are told a very specific story for a very specific person purpose at a very specific time in those characters' lives. And we tend to stop at the end of the story. The brilliance of people who go beyond the ending that they were given and think, like, what would Lizzie and Mr. Darcy really have been like as married people? What would Jane and Mr. Bingley have been like as married people? Like,
Well, Lizzie would
Mr.
never see
Bennet.
the kids. Mr. Darcy would rarely be home. They would be ostracized by at least some of society for marrying down. And she would just become one of the hardest workers in society because she just got married into one of the biggest families in society.
There was, I don't know if, I feel like there was a version or a fan fiction or something where I read where in it Jane and Charles have issues conceiving and like.
Yeah, I think that was oh, let me grab the book. Hang on.
But like, I think that, like, yeah, not everything is going to go well necessarily. Them getting to the point of being married
But there's
didn't.
also that like
The
breath and
Pamela
gap of
age
they lived happily ever after, but that doesn't mean like children, and it doesn't mean that they don't live, they are happy in the end. It does not guarantee you that every moment past this last chapter is perfection.
correct.
What was the book read?
The Pamela Aiden books
Oh, yeah.
about Mr. Darcy. Yeah, they're excellent. Pride and Prejudice from Darcy's point of view, and they go past the end of it a little bit too into what married life is like for those characters.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that we kind of talked on some of the what was different or why people were so obsessed. What do you think? Well, let's go into this thing. I'm gonna actually pause where I was going with that thought. The hand flex.
I love the hand flex.
The totally improvised Matthew McFadden hand flex that wasn't written into the script. Come on.
I am a sucker. That is my trope for unrequited, like
Or
friend, enemies to lovers kind of deal.
hiding it.
Oh my God, just that, like, I want to touch you, but I'm not allowed to moment. That it's so very evocative of the depth of his feeling for her, and she has no idea.
Like that over a clip of 50 Shades. I'm like, give me a
Oh,
hand
100%.
flexing over like the most explicit
100%.
scene. I'm like, I'll take the hand. I'm good.
And also, to your point, Red, you said that she had no idea of his feelings. I don't think he fully knew he had feelings. He was probably at
Yeah.
that point so confused, like,
I
why
like a
do I want
peasant. Why do I like a peasant?
right? Like, why do I like this person who is not what I was raised to like or expect to like? If why, you know,
Who
if not.
teases me, who pulls me out of my comfort zone, who, yeah. I
Yeah.
think you're right. He didn't have the capability of mining the depths of his own feelings at that point in the story, which is part of why Darcy is so classically beloved, right? The growth of that character. Not that he changes for her, not that she changes for him, but that he has the wherewithal to go, I'm doing something wrong here. Let me please correct my stupidity and behavior and become a better person. And, you know, I have no expectation of her ever liking me, but I'm still going to do this because it's the right thing to do versus.
I think there was changing of his. I think there had to be some form of change because it's not just that he's like, this is the right thing to do. Her rejection, I think he had to change because he was realizing, I think he viewed like possible matrimony and quote love at that as he saw it as that her, I want her, that's what I want for my wife. Versus understanding what was expected of him beyond just providing, like to listen to, she pushed him to like reevaluate how he was.
Yeah, but the beauty of it is that when she rejects him, he has no expectation, A, that he will even see her again because they move in such different circles.
Yeah.
But also B, that if they were to see each other again, that she would ch have changed towards him. Like the first inkling that he had, they spend months. He spends months working on himself without the expectation of seeing her again until she surprises him at his own house.
Like
Yeah,
does.
like a one percenter got checked for the first time ever. Every room he's ever walked And took
into,
the note. He
this is
took
how much
the note.
money, this is how much property, this is who his friends are. For the first time ever, instead of a woman falling over him, she's like, not only do I not like you when you propose to me, which is the gold standard for any woman of the time. I should want you. You are my financial future. She still says no. And his note back is like, okay, I should probably work on that.
But he that without any expectation of reciprocation on
But
her,
like
with
one time.
no transactional expectations whatsoever. It is, he checks himself before he wrecks himself, and well, actually after he wrecks himself quite
Brilliantly.
boldly.
Like he's like, here's a cliff. Let me go jump off
Let
it.
me jump off this sucker,
But
but
he also gets
that's the
her.
enduring legacy. Yeah.
Like she has a mud-coated skirt. He understands that she likes to walk. And then when she's like, no, I'm gonna walk back to the town to like meet up with my aunt and uncle, like he wants to go for a walk with her.
Just
He
not.
doesn't know how to ask, and she doesn't even consider that that would be a thing because she's so used to going off on her own. So when she doesn't give him the in, which would be the perfect like walk down the lane and fall in love moment, he's like, yep, I respect your right to walk alone.
He respects her boundaries.
Wait, that's a big
That's
one.
a massive one.
In a
He's
chivalry, like, you cannot walk alone, fair maiden, in the forest. He was like, no, you do you, girl.
yeah. You're willful and independent, you know. Those aren't necessarily bad things. Go for it. Do your thing.
And
Also,
not
you
only
catch
that. me in your house, like, spying on
Exactly.
you. I'm not stopping on the patio to be like, let's chat this out like reasonable adults. I am past the hotel. I am two villages over. I am burying myself in a bunker. You will never see me again. I'm not stopping to chit chat about why I'm stalking you. Hands deep in his underwear drawer. Oh, you live here?
Yeah, I'm gonna make a mad dash to avoid being red in the face.
I like to walk. No, I like to sprint at a rate that Olympic runners have never seen before. I beat my family back to the hotel.
Yeah, I'm gonna run. So I guess we are all pro hand flex.
Yeah.
Love the hand flex.
Because back then it was much more like, it's about the small little things, like the flower, the fan, the like, the little intricacies of like life that had so much more meaning instead of like, yo, badunkadunk.
I have issues if that's what's happening.
I like your
I mean,
excellent potatoes. Have you seen the sermons?
Mr. Collins, bless him. He is,
Excellent boiled potatoes.
and I think that I don't know if it was the actor who plays him in this version or the Colin Firth one, and didn't realize that the whole boiled potatoes would become such a thing. He like.
It's the Keira Knightley version that doesn't it doesn't appear 95 version, I don't think.
No, but the Mr. Bennett in the 95 version, because they all sit around the meal eating, he ordered like a trifle because he was like, this is great. Like, they'll get you the dish of your choice. I'll get to eat like this, trifle or something, whatever he wanted. He didn't realize it was going to be like 90 takes, and for every 90 takes, he had to have a spoonful. So, like, his favorite holiday dessert
Oh,
was
ruined.
forever ruined because, like, he hasn't eaten it to this day because he's like, when you eat 90 spoonfuls of it, you like be careful what food you ask for. And I forget who asked for like grapes or something. Oh, Miss Bennett asked for grapes. So it was like, she's just eating a grape. She ate 90 grapes. She went home and had a full dinner. And he, like, that is his biggest regret from the filming of that one was like, never again did I eat trifle.
The world. So, what do you think was not well executed about this?
Ooh, me, call on me. I have this answer. Ooh,
Wow.
ooh,
Let me see. Someone's short and
not at all sarcastic.
yeah. But otherwise, I'll take you, tall girl.
Keira Knightley's Emma effing wig and the little short hairs coming out the back because she was also filming Domino at the time. You're telling me nobody had a bobby pin. You couldn't have slightly stepped up the wig. She's got spiky hair coming out of the back for like half the movie. It's driving me crazy every time I watch it. If they could CGI the back of her neck for the 20th anniversary, like if 25th,
Yeah,
I'm just
we all
saying,
saw
fix
how
it.
that worked for Henry Cavill's mustache in Batman versus Superman. It doesn't work out well.
No,
No,
I haven't seen
I
that.
did not. Wow, you had the strong
Feelings.
feeling.
Every single, because from scene to scene, it's there and it's not, and it's there and it's not. And once you see it, like,
Think I've seen it, but I didn't care enough about it
I
to
was watching
know.
the like public ball scene at, I think I was on a flight or something, so the subtitles were up. And then you hear like he's being introduced and like, this is a really great butcher, and this is the candlestick maker kind of stuff. And you realize there's all this dialogue that shows up in the subtitles. For the public ball scene. So now it's like, oh, there's so much going on in the background you don't know about. So I ended up watching it with subtitles once just because they added on all this other side conversation. That's my favorite part.
I mean, I gotta say, I do enjoy subtitles now for a lot of point, not because, as you supposedly age, we don't do that. It helps, people tend to, I like it because you, like, for the same reason, you catch little things that are being said in the background. But not necessarily for this one.
I think it's because I'm used to them for foreign films. Like, if they're there, I think I have to be paying attention. So, like, for foreign films, I need them because I don't speak, whatever. But like for English films, I'm like, I don't want to play reading comprehension. I just want to, whatever my ears allow me to hear is good enough.
Red, what about you? What do you feel of this version?
So I think that one of the reasons that the story works as well as it does is the contrast between Lizzie Jane and the rest of the family. And this version doesn't emphasize that contrast as well as other versions that I've seen. I mentioned it earlier, like Mr. and Mrs. Bennet are a lot more likable in this version. You understand where they're coming from. Whereas in other versions, it's Mrs. Bennet is scarily selfish. And that almost is her motivation for getting her daughters off of her plate, so to speak, and get them married. As is Mr. Bennet. He's also incredibly selfish by not taking care of the family he had rather than hoping for a boy. So I think that contrast was missing for me. I mean, I just love Donald Sutherland, so maybe that's part of it, that I know and love that actor and know that he is a kindly, or was a kindly soul, at his core, versus Mr. Bennet in the book and in other versions is kind of aloof and doesn't interact with his family as much. So I think that's one of the things that the film did not do well. I don't necessarily think that it's they got it wrong, but I just think that that contrast isn't there for me. And one of the things that it did well is dial up the yearning. It dials up the yearning. It for Bennet, not Bennet, Bingley and Jane, I have been the most unutterable ass. And the hand flex, you know, it really does the romance bit well, without taking away from the rest of the story. I think that's where I come down on it. It's not my favorite version. The 1995 version is my favorite version, but that's because I like the bigger storylines.
Yes, and that's what I was gonna say is because for the pro of it being a short, a faster, modern telling, one of the things then you get lost with that to contrast that, you miss some of those small little lines that I just become little things that you just miss that are not said. One of the couple lines I liked more, some of the stuff with Lady Catherine when they're at her house and talking about the piano and practicing. So like, it's a shortened version of that, but some of Lizzie's zingers get missed.
There's a scene with the after not Lizzie comes back. What the hell? Runs off with Wickham.
Lydia.
Lyd
When Lydia comes back and they're sitting around the table and he's talking about like, oh, we're moving to the north, and then Mr. Bennet says like to his other daughter, like, absolutely, you can't go visit them. I was like, they kind of did a disservice. Like what Wickham did at the time would have been the most scandalous thing. This version kind of was like, oh, she ran away, whatever. It's like, no. And also, dear creeper, you'll never get your hands on another one of my daughters to like play this influence again. But that was like so subtle when it was like at the time, they would have lived shunned for the rest of their lives.
Again, I think that's something they miss because it's so quick with some of it, with that whole scene is, well, that plot, I should say, you don't maybe grasp how much of a scandal this was.
You don't grasp how much of a scandal it was. You don't grasp how much Lizzie had already let him go from her affections. Like in the 1995 version, she says that, go, go, I would not wish you back again, when he's leaving to go off with his regiment. So that's one of those little lines, little zingers that you don't get in this version. But it really, it you don't get the impact, the social and economic impact that would have happened for a 16-year-old running away with a man supposedly to get married and then not actually getting married until several weeks into their affair.
And the
Only when
youngest.
found, because if they hadn't been found, he probably would have dumped her in a ditch, like
Right.
8 months later.
Yep.
Probably pregnant.
But it's also, like he ran up debts in town. He was like, he went from town to town to town with the military, building up debts. So he was not a good character in any way, which is kind of like, oh, he's naughty. It's like, no, he's so much worse. Like
Yeah.
he targeted a 12-year-old, Darcy's sister. Like that's.
Well, she was 15, 14 and
Oh,
15.
she was about
So,
15 at the time.
okay, but in that time.
But he would have been, first of all, he had seen that child grow up.
That's your sister. That's your sister.
Second of all, when he started pursuing her, she would have been about 14.
Yeah. And he was what?
Even for the time period, you can make all the arguments you want, but even for the time period, that would have been seen as disgusting.
Because Darcy's what, like 15 years her senior?
10 years her senior.
Tenure.
So
And I think
Darcy, if Darcy would have been 25 when the whole thing with Georgiana went down, he's about 27, 28, during the course of Pride and Prejudice, I think.
Wickham is a little bit younger than, like a year or two younger than
Then
Darcy.
Darcy, yeah.
So yeah,
But like
either way,
still
he's.
it's
And the
an age gap
implication,
you would recognize.
you also don't get the implication that Mr. Wickham might be the older Mr. Darcy's son in the way that you do in the 1995 version. There's he was the son of the
Stewart.
steward,
The lateness of Darcy
who is a
Stewart.
very important position for someone who had as much land as Fitzwilliam Darcy's father had. However, no, nobody else, none of the other important servants, their sons or daughters didn't get taken care of the way that Wickham did.
He was educated with him.
He
That
was,
was an expense.
yeah.
That wasn't just like you guys play together. That
He saw
was.
the same tutors as did Fitzwilliam. He went to the same schools as did Fitzwilliam. They were at Cambridge together, for heaven's sake. That is no small implication that Fitzwilliam may have actually been Darcy's brother and therefore Georgiana's brother,
Well,
and
then.
nobody would have
Even
talked
Mr.
about it.
Collins being a little bit light in the shorts and having to be told to go get married because that's your religious duty.
Yep.
Like, we're worried that you're on the lighter side of life. We need you to have a wife because it's looking not good for you to be a bachelor right now. Like, that's, and for the youngest sister, the expectation is she's going to be a spinster. So the bad singing, the want to stay home, the dislike of parties, that's perfect because guess what her job's going to be when everybody else goes off and lives their life.
Mary. Yeah.
Like Mary's always this little character where you're like, oh, just give her a shot. She had so much more to give.
Yeah.
Think one of the other things I didn't like from this is how Lydia is the one to explain that Darcy was the one that found them. And because I think to me, it's a conflict to the character because Lydia is so, I mean, she does a good job delivering it, don't get me wrong, but that character, such a basically an airhead, and so unaware of anything to be the one delivering this monumental piece of
Shift
information.
of, yeah.
And so kind of like passively, like just like casually over dinner, like trying to grab her wine. Oh, by the way, it was actually Darcy who fixed this. And he was the one, and to have the details of knowing that he was the one who commissioned everything, like,
I mean, that expense would have been, but also in a place like London, to find somebody holed up in a little shack somewhere who probably doesn't go anywhere but the pub and the bedroom, that wouldn't have been an easy find. That would have been an
correct.
extraordinary hunt through the city.
Especially for someone who was as unfamiliar with that part of London as Mr. Darcy would have been, because his exclusive access to London would have been Mayfair and maybe the House of Commons, because he wasn't a lord. But like he wouldn't have seen Cheapside. He wouldn't have seen what's the east side of London at all. He wouldn't have known where to begin to find them. But find them he did, and that is an impressive feat.
I think also in the 1995 version, he finds the woman. You see him find the woman kind of helped orchestrate him.
Georgiana's governess.
Correct. So I think that kind of helped bridges that gap that you're referring to him knowing where to go. But he also would have had the resources and the money if he didn't
For
know.
Bow Street Runners and
He's going to find someone who would know. Another thing that I did not like, and I will say I'm not current to know at the time, the outfit that Caroline Bingley wears to the Netherfield ball. She had that
the
like
off
kind of,
the shoulder straps thing.
yeah, like there's no the sleeveless.
That would have been a it looks great on her with her auburn hair and her creamy skin. Like it's flawless, but that would have been the most scandalous thing, especially in a smaller village. Like maybe you could have pulled that off in Paris. It probably wouldn't have made it to London. It certainly wouldn't have made it to suburban Pemberley. Like it just it no.
And
Just
maybe
absolutely
part of that
not.
was her trying to flex on them and being like showing her brother, look at they this wouldn't even like they don't even understand how much I am making fun of them with just even what I'm wearing.
Well, even the reference to like expect us to catch a greased pig, like that was a very kind of like
Which part?
they used to grease a pig and then they would make the courtiers chase it to make them look ridiculous. In 95. She says it when they're dancing in the public square, you know, I expect anybody to take out a pig and expect it to chase us.
I don't remember that part.
So it used to be a form of entertainment to make courtiers look ridiculous because chasing a greased pig while wearing your silk and satin suits was like. She's trying to slay in very cool ways, but you know, like. She is a. It took me years to figure out she was actually in Yellowstone, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I think the other thing also, obviously again, you have shortened time, you're gonna cut characters and change. The missing of the other Bingley sister and her husband,
Yeah.
I miss them because they also are just, you know,
Mrs.
settled
First.
married couples in high society.
Yeah, but again, not titled. She's a
Right.
missus. She's not a lady. So it's like the bourgeoisie aspect of the Bingleys, and especially the sisters Bingley, that's something else that's not driven home. It's they're seen as high society by the people in Lizzie's area at Longbourn, but they're not actually as high in society as they appear to be in the instep.
As somebody half his rank.
And I also felt that the actress who plays Georgiana, loved the relationship between her and Darcy, but
Too bubbly.
yes, too out there, too open. I feel like for a
She
lady,
skipped. Like you do
yeah,
not
like
skip.
you are the lady of this massive estate, like you would have that would have been drilled into you. Like maybe if it was just you and Darcy, cool. But now there are other people.
But
You
also
need.
weird for brother and sister to hop, skip, and spin quite like that. Like, I'm super excited you just bought me a pianoforte, but like, maybe not the spinning.
And also, I don't know if it's just delivery when she first meets him and when Lizzie meets the two of them. And she's like, my brother says you play well, and you know, you must play a duet with me or something. And she's like, brother, you must force her. And the way they leave that, I'm like, that just was like, that was an editing
It's
choice.
it doesn't feel like Georgiana.
Yeah.
From what little we gather about her is that she's very reserved and not forthcoming. She kind of hides behind her social mask a little bit. So.
So there's that. Obviously, I believe, you know, when she's getting Lizzie's getting a tour of Pemberley, it's not actual statue that they have. It's a painting. Because you know, he just sat there and got his face chiseled. And...
Here's the bust of Mr. Darcy for you to lust after. Don't lick it.
yeah, a Roman Greek, or you know, Roman Greek statue.
But also, like, Lizzie reads the letter in front of Mr. Darcy about the downfall of her family. Like, you would never walk out into the common room and be like, hey, guy who I don't really like, we're socially destroyed.
But that is a plot point from the book.
I
Right.
know, but it's just like, that would never, that would just never. That's one of those, like, it helps the storyline, but you would never walk out and say that.
I think for the fact that it includes Wick. And again, yeah, I could see that you wouldn't normally, but at this point, she has realized that whether either one of them recognize it or not, they trust each other more than they show. So she knows she, because he's also been honest with her. He was the first one to open that honesty and say, "Hey, that's cool that you like Wickman all. BT Dubs, he tried to make off with my 14-year-old sister.
He's a cad.
He's a rake." And so he opened that confidence first in such a, you know, such a private, you know, detail of his life. So I think for her, while not common to the times, I think it was okay for their relationship because he opened that door first and she was reciprocating back because, and not because she wanted to be like, this is part of your doing, but because he could sympathize with what her family was going through and what.
Not to mention the fact that it would have been public news anyway.
I was gonna say, like,
Because,
I feel like he would find out in London like a week later and then fix
yeah.
it versus her
The
telling
only
him.
reason that it didn't go public was because she
Okay.
told him.
But he told his aunt because of a, you know, scandalously patched up. She knew. So he did over dinner at some point just be like, guess what I did?
Yeah. Well, it's implicated that Mr. Collins told her, not that Mr. Darcy told her.
No, Darcy wouldn't have done that.
No. Mr. Collins, however, would have run his full mouth.
Mr. Collins would have murdered someone if it meant getting in better graces for Miss for Lady Catherine.
I would have moved into the parlor for my own particular use. Like, I know she encourages him to garden for his health, but like, I would have moved into the parlor for my own particular use.
I mean, for God's sakes, did you hear how much was spent on
The glazing for the windows?
glazing for the windows? She put shelves in a closet, tall girl. Shelves. My God, this woman could walk on water, in his opinion.
Hey, here's
I
a
mean,
question
wouldn't it
about
be
Mr.
nice to have a
Collins?
fan
Did you put up shelves? You put up shelves? Oh my God. Bestest person ever.
What was the question, Red?
Could Mr. Collins have been fixed with group therapy and a chat?
No.
No. He's a man who spends time thinking of compliments that are the worst compliments on earth. That's not a guy looking for feedback.
No.
Even when Lizzie tells him, like, don't go over there and talk to Mr. Darcy, it's gonna be embarrassing. He's like, and off I go. Heaven
That's all
forbid you don't know my association with your aunt.
that is the encouragement I need for you as a female to tell me no, well then damn it, off I go. No, I think he's too self-absorbed and pompous for no reason. Like I get it, like you had, yes, you were clergy and like great, but in the scope of the, he somehow saw him being a clergyman on par with Lady Catherine and like that he kind of like ran right next, like not in the circle, but like right touching. And it's like, actually though, you weren't.
Correct.
You served your point, you were your purpose, I should say. You were necessary for my not church. What is
Advancement.
no, the
Parish.
thank you for the parish. But like we're not cool like that. So yeah, no, he would not have, therapy would done him no good. He just would have probably bored the therapist who before she started to want to stab, or whoever wants to stab their own eyes or slit their wrists. I don't know, one of the two.
Can you imagine a family therapy session? You get all the Bennets, you get all the Collinses into like just even a family picnic. That would have kept Jane writing for another 6 to 8 books.
That actually If someone has a resume, can we get someone who has the motivation? I'll help you like spitball like themes and all and outline this, but can we get the Bennett's family therapy sessions? Like I think that'd be a great series, book series.
There's the fan fiction that tries to connect them all. So, like, Mr. Darcy knows somebody, so sensibility connects into, like, how can we, like, try to make it? Like, certain
Yep.
books give you, like, the map and the fist. Like,
Got it.
there's a lot of people who have been trying to connect the Jane Austen books of, like, how these people would have lived around the same time and known each other.
The Ferrers would have known the Darcys and the, yeah.
Got it.
I mean, there's also websites devoted to like pick your favorite Mr. Collins, pick your favorite Jane, like from all the adaptations, who is your like favorite Mr. Darcy kind of stuff.
Another thing I also didn't like in this version a little bit, Charlotte Lucas. I love the actress who plays
Yeah.
her. I like her, like she's good in acting. The one thing I didn't like is, and a 95 version and other versions, Charlotte is always fully aware of, she was brilliant in the sense that she's like, she's 27, she's not married, no prospects, she's already a burden to her family, for God's sakes. So she makes the smart strategic move. That I think is spot on, fine. But she, I felt in other versions, she's always still aware, even after she's married, what a silly man he is. And but in this version, I feel like she kind of turns a little bit, like she drank
She drank the
Collins
Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid. Did you just say Kool-Aid too?
I did.
Okay.
She drank the Kool-Aid.
She drank the Collins Kool-Aid, probably potato flavored. Just vodka at that point. And like she kind of was like, oh, like when she's telling Lizzie, wear whatever you want, she like it comes across like she's now, dialed into this, oh, we are a little bit better than we are. And that kind of is like, I didn't feel like she was not mean or rude or anything, but I just felt like that she kind of loses some of that like awareness.
I think she
Fair
takes it as
point.
part of her labor. Like, I'm free, I get my own sitting room, but this is the ridiculousness I have to put up with. Like, when we sit in church and my husband basically says fornicate, like, I'd rather have my own home and run it and have to be associated with an idiot to bob along
Oh yeah, no, I
than
get
to,
that.
like, because if she's sitting there rolling her eyes, he's going to eventually catch on, or somebody's going to correct him as to her behavior. So it's just.
I don't think he'd be that aware.
No, but, should his favorite person point it out?
Well, maybe if they have Catherine, if Lady Catherine points it out, sure, of course. But he's still, Elizabeth is flat out saying, I don't want to marry you. And he's like, I get it. You're just playing hard to get. And she's like, bro, I need you to pick up what I'm putting down. And he's like, no, you still want me. So I don't think he'd be that aware. But yeah, if it came from Catherine, obviously, whatever she says comes straight from high above, and she is second only, She might even pass God. Who knows? I'm not
If
sure.
you could find out who the Collins family is, like, was he a mama's boy, or was that just natural and a side effect of being completely unloved? Like,
I mean, he could have also become that way if you think about it, since they're, I don't know, what are they, first cousins, second cousins, since he's,
first cousins.
so.
It's Mr. Bennett's sister married Mr. Collins's father, I think.
And so, at a certain point, you realize that the Bennets aren't going to be having any male heirs. And regardless of what you may or may not do in life, you are inheriting this estate. You kind of get a little uppity in yourself, I'm sure. You're like, I did nothing but was born male, and that's all. And I succeed and ready.
That's the entirety of my achievement in life.
That's
But
right.
also his first visit in, like, I'm gonna get this house, we're family, so we must have been in traveling distance. The first time I ever visit you guys is on the behest of my patron. You wouldn't scope that stuff out at 18 and be like, yo, I got access to a sweet decrepit home in the country.
Don't be jelly. And also the whole like, scoping out like, oh, I'm glad the estate can afford to have a cook. Like,
How would you not know that? Like, your mom must have gotten some, like, you would know what the father's yearly income would be. you would have a pretty good idea of like
Yeah.
what your total earnings would be
And this
because
is why I
he
feel,
knew what his daughters would get.
but this is why I feel he would be clueless because he didn't like start to like,
It didn't occur to him to do
no.
any of those things until Lady Catherine was like, "Hey, you're inheriting an estate. You should probably take an interest in it." Just a thought.
Maybe do something, learn. Hey, if you're going to have that estate and you're a priest, well, not a priest,
A vicar.
vicar, maybe you should be the example. Get be a wife.
Okay, so Mr. Collins is wildly unattractive to all of us. Like, nobody gets their rocks off to Mr. Collins.
Absolutely not.
Is Mr. Darcy actually attractive, or does he just convince us he's attractive because he's willing to change, which is like the ultimate female fantasy?
Are we talking about physical
Well,
or personality and all?
because we don't really know what he looks like in the book. It's
No,
just.
she describes him as a pleasant-looking man, so
But I mean.
he's reasonably attractive.
So is Ted Bundy. Like that doesn't give me much to work with.
No, but that's the attraction, is the fact that he accepts boundaries and he takes notes.
And he changes. He doesn't just hear you, he hears you and
He
understands.
absorbs that shit.
So yes, if we're just going yes, because I mean, as a shock to neither of you, banter, good banter, where you are intellectually trying to one up each other, is so attractive. I mean, even when he's in the room with her and Caroline, and talking about you could only be up, doing one of two things. You're either in each other's company to discuss like basically secret stuff and I'm in your way, or you think your figure will look better by walking and, then I can admire from here. Like, you little cheeky son of a gun. You little son of Pemberley. You are just that, it's just a little bit outside of his, that's I think the beginning where he shows just a little bit of his personality to Lizzie that he probably wouldn't have shown elsewhere. But he's in one of his best friend's homes. He could be comfortable and be a little loose. So it's not, and it's not for the money, like that seems a bit much to have to be lady of a large estate like that. The banter, the pushing each other to be better and to listen to each other and say, you're not necessarily wrong in how you view things, but you're not necessarily right.
It's a truly reciprocal relationship.
Yes. You.
There's a level of sameness, even though they come from two very different parts of society, that they stand on the same footing. And he respects her, and she respects him.
200 years later, do you think Jane Austen would be pissed that women still just want a man who listens and takes notes? Like, I
No.
mean, she wrote this at the time, and it was like, okay, but
It was
still, you guys,
revolutionary.
you're lusting after my film, and you still haven't, like, gotten on the ball with this one? Really?
I think that she would have been gratified that love is a thing that we talk about when it comes to relationships now, because it wasn't really talked about when she was a young woman and then writing. It wasn't a factor that people considered important
It was a nice
in.
to have, not a must have.
Yeah. So I think that she would be happy that love is something that we actually talk about before getting into a relationship now. I think she would be a little bit disappointed that, yeah, that men and women are less likely to bend for each other than they may have been in times past. Yeah, I think she'd kind of just roll her eyes and go, I guess I have to write my next book now about whatever in the heck is going on in modern society, because it is rough out there.
Oh.
You didn't answer the question about Mr. Darcy. Did you find him, tall girl? Do you find his character, whether physical or personality, as attractive?
Okay, because I don't do the looks thing, like it actually bothers me. I do like the fact that he's willing to take notes and change. Matthew McFadden, while attractive, is not the hottest thing. I actually appreciate that they didn't make him like Sir Laurence Olivier, kind of like.
Agreed.
I like that they were like mid for Hollywood. Like, not that he's not attractive, but they didn't try to play it up. They didn't like level in his cheekbones, like, the games they used to play. He's way hotter than the pastier Mr. Darcy would have been in real life at that time, like inbred, no chin, kind of like. Mr. Darcy would have been so unattractive. Like, just so unattractive.
He says he's good to look at.
No.
Good
For
looking.
that kind of money and that kind of inbreeding, he definitely wouldn't have been. That is the most fictional part of Pride and Prejudice. The fact that he was rich, well liked,
And good
well
looking.
spoken, and good looking. No, there's a reason they kept on marrying the peasant class, because the peasant class mixed their DNA enough to like make something attractive.
So, okay, so looks aside.
No, I think he convinces you he is good because he represents, like, the financial security aside, Jane and her sister, or sorry, Lizzie and her sister were pretty enough that they would have done well in society, even just in their own neighborhood. It's the fact that he is willing to onboard and take notes when he has no financial reason to do so. Because there's no woman in the like a ballroom that he couldn't have just pointed to and been like, you.
Correct.
And many were waiting for that. I think one of the things when you're talking about the looks of Matthew McFadden, that both him, he and Colin Firth both felt awkward taking on
Under,
roles because
yeah, under, underprepared for the task of being Mr. Darcy.
that they both felt like I think it was when Colin got the role, like, I think it was his brother who said something like, "You're gonna be,"
You?
like, yeah, like.
You're gonna be the heartthrob. What?
Yeah.
But
And
Colin
he
also wrote a letter to McFadden and was like, you do not understand. Like, secure your relationship, secure your marriage, because from this moment on, women are going to think you're Mr. Darcy for the rest of your life. You will get no rest as Mr. Darcy. But then he's like, every like 20 years, this film comes around and people like see me in public and they're like, oh my God. But also, oh my God, you're so old. And it's like, it's got to be heart-crushing. Like, once a year when this film is shown in schools, a new batch of te like tween girls fall in love with him and then quickly are like, oh my God, you're my grandfather's age.
now he could be like a Mr. Bennet. But yeah, I think that that's kind of funny that both men felt like they were like not deserving or not from an actor perspective, but the mantle of the role, or that they could carry the weight of it. So I think that is always kind of.
Well, I think that's part of the misconception of Mr. Darcy is that he's supposed to be some Adonis that, is just drop dead at attractive. No,
We like
he's
a good dad
attractive.
bod. Let's be honest, deep down.
He's attractive because of what he does, not how he looks. So I think that there's a lot of people who have not read Pride and Prejudice and have only seen the films or haven't even seen the films, and they just assume that the feminine ideal for a man is Brad Pitt in Troy. Whereas we're just like, no, if he's got a little tummy and some jiggly thighs, I'm cool so long as he listens to me and like doesn't make me feel dumb or doesn't expect me to be dumb.
So did she
To
just
make
want
him
him
feel
for his
better.
library?
Yeah, I just want him for his library.
You were never more attractive than I found out how many books you owned. Like, feel free to go back to London and talk with your business manager.
That
I got
scene in Beauty
stuff.
and the Beast?
Oh, that's
That scene in Beauty and the
100%
Beast when he gives her the library? Forget it. You can get it, sir. I don't care how beastly you look, you can get it.
Like, even when they're at the other house and her sister's sick upstairs, like, I got this. I'm in the library. She's already reading a book. Like, I'm here to take care of my sister, but I also found time to peruse the shelves. Like, don't you worry. I have my priorities.
Like, Jane, you good? All right, good. I'm in the, this is a cliffhanger, girl. I gotta read this one.
I gotta read the, what was it?
Udolpho?
Udolpho, the Mysteries of Udolpho.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure that was synchronized here. Yeah, no, so that is I think that's what makes him attractive, is his ability, especially at that time, to have said, I hear what you're saying, that my status, and while everyone has always fallen over themselves for me, you are a person who, yes, it would make things easier if you had money, but you're not willing to compromise on your not only your personal beliefs, but how I treat your family, especially your beloved sister. And you know what? Maybe I need to take a look at me. And I don't think many people have at any point told him that. Even in like the 1995 version, when Bingley is like kind of slightly yelling at him, like, you mean to tell me Jane was in London this whole damn time and you kept your mouth shut? Like the first time, and he admits, like, I was wrong. And
The level of attractiveness just grows.
oh my God. Like, sir, I will throw a handkerchief at you. Like, please.
Will say also a special shout out to this version because the soundtrack,
Oh, beautiful.
just like it's a
Absolutely.
character on its own. Like,
The swell of the orchestra when,
Jesus.
oh my God. The piano, it just,
Or when you hear her play and then you hear the sister play it well, you're like, oh, that's so well done. Plinky, 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 la da 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 da.
it is so, and it's, you know, like the other ones, the 1995 version, I think that's one we've been comparing the most to. That is a great soundtrack too. And it worked with that. But I think because this version is so short, they leaned into the music more to help develop the emotions, the feelings. And I mean, obviously, soundtracks do that all the time in general. But I think sometimes, depending on how the film is, the dialogue, all that goes into place, and they know that they had to fill in places that they couldn't do with dialogue, a runtime, scenery, and that's where this music just I don't know, just brings a
Comes out.
level of emotion and depth that it helps you fall in love with the film. I think maybe that's the other part of it, is that you fall in love with the film, not only for the plot and the book and the story and the characters, but you're falling in love with the way the music makes you feel, and that, you know, gets into your head for your love for this show, this movie, excuse me.
I'm still on the library thing.
I
You want to
mean,
go riding in the rain again? He's going to be here for another month, and I desperately need a new book. Risk pneumonia for your dearest sister.
know, one of the scenes that I always love, I think the way they did the proposal in this one, and it's, you know, in the rain and like outside, and she is just like up toe to toe in his face. Like that, I think, also adds a little bit to the modernness, while Lizzie does push back and she's like, you know, idiot, do you think I'm going to accept you based on this? This version, she is not, like, she is up in his face, wedding, and like both kind of like there's that tension of
I
like,
was going to say the lean and almost kiss thing.
oh,
You were just like,
if you two weren't just screaming at each other, this would be the greatest moment to just kiss.
literally nobody around. This would be the place.
You can be scandalous. Show a little ankle, for God's sakes. Lizzie, I know. I'm just going there. But I think that, like, that's also what helped makes this a bit more modern, is the enthusiasm and delivery of her rage and turning down his proposal, rejection. That is all, like, just that, like, are you effing kidding me right now? You're coming at me and you can't understand why I'm rejecting you. Please let me enlighten you. And but the tension, oh, the tension, such good tension.
They give good almost thinking about a kiss. I'm just saying. But that's infinitely better. Had they actually like leaned in for a lip peck, it just wouldn't have been the same. That second of like, oh. Anyway, who needs adult content when you have a hand flex?
Forever the hand flex.
Well, that's a wrap on today's episode. Join us next time when we discuss the art of doing nothing.
If you've enjoyed this episode, subscribe, leave a review, or at least tell a friend who loves Pride and Prejudice more than they love themselves.
Want more chaos? Head over to Patreon for excellent boiled potato recipes, exclusive content, and the behind-the-scenes nonsense we probably shouldn't be sharing.
See you next time.
Until then, stay sensible.
Or embrace the chaos.
Preferably both.